We hope you find this WILL podcast to be valuable. A $10 voluntary credit card contribution at willpledge.org will help us continue to make podcasts of our programs available. Thank you. And that address again is willpledge.org. WILLPLEDGE.ORG. Now here's your program.
We're talking with three folks today about shallow wells for clean water in Africa, the Marion Medical Mission. And we have in our studio with us Paul and Gay Adams. Gay has been on these mission trips to Africa to help with these wells once, and Paul has been four times. Welcome.
Thank you.
Good to have you here. And by phone, we have Tom Logan, who is the founder and CEO of this operation. Tom, can you hear me all right?
I can hear you fine. Thanks, Steve. Hi, Paul and Gail.
Hi, Tom. Hi.
Now, when we call you a CEO, you're a volunteer, right?
Yes, it's a volunteer, right. Marion Medical has only one paid employee.
And who's
everything else is volunteer.
And like who is the paid employee?
It's that secretary, Dana Bartlett.
Uh-huh. And all the rest of you are volunteers, and you came up with this idea, and it's been going on now 25 years.
That's right. Started in 1985, and a lot of things we do people don't think can, from a business standpoint, can happen. But one of the things that started it was that we wanted to make sure that 100% of all of our donations got to the mission field in Africa without even the cost of a stamp being deducted.
And when you say mission field, what happens with this money? How do you go about getting shallow wells for clean water in Africa, and why?
Well, one of the major reasons that we got involved in this was that this was a way that we could impact the lives of the extreme poor in a very dramatic and a positive way. You have to understand that where we're working in Africa, Malawi, Zambia, and Tanzania, 2/3 of the population make 41 cents a day or less. So it's extreme poverty. And you also need to understand that 80% of the children that die before the age of 5 die from waterborne or water-related diseases. There's also some ripple effects to that. And, for example, if you're an adult and you're a subsistence farmer, if you're sick, you have a hard time working in the fields. But if you're healthy, you can work longer in the fields, and it means less chance of starvation.
Now, Paul, you've not only been to Africa as part of the Marion Medical Mission, but you're also affiliated at the University of Illinois with the African Studies Department here, and you've been to Africa taking students, right?
That's correct. I've been taking students to West Africa, primarily to the island country of Sao Tome and Principe, for the last 5 years. And these students are involved in service learning, action research type projects.
And what intrigued you about joining with this Marion Medical Mission project to get clean water?
Part of it's probably in the DNA. My grandfather and great-grandfather were Presbyterian missionaries in Korea. And there's just been this acknowledgement in our family that we need to extend ourselves and do other things. Marion Medical Mission has a couple of components that I find very intriguing. One is, of course, no administrative costs. But the one that I really, really like is sustainability. We have a relationship with the local villagers and the people that we work with. And we consider it to be a horizontal relationship that we use indigenous knowledge. And we also train the folks in how these wells are put in, how they're maintained, and then they're responsible for following through with that. And that adds a sustainability model that has endured for the last 25 years.
It's just it's an extraordinary program, and that it really, that Paul has put his finger on one of the keys, because it really does a little good if you put in a well that doesn't last. I mean, gets people healthy and the children are healthy and so forth until the well breaks. And then if the people can't afford to fix it, and don't know how to fix it, then they have to go back to the old water sources and so forth. So the key is being able to put in a well that the people themselves are able to sustain and take care of.
Now, Gay, Tom and Paul have both talked about the importance of health, and you're in the medical field as a chiropractor professionally. Which country were you in when you went on the trip?
I spent all my time in Malawi.
Malawi. Mm-hmm. And what did you see as a person who cares about health?
Well, because the program had been in place for quite a few years before I had arrived, I got to hear stories from the older folks in the villages of how they never dreamed of clean drinking water in their lifetime and how blessed they were to receive this gift of life through this clean water, not just for themselves but for their generations to come. And I really didn't see sickness or things that I thought I would see going into this community.
And the typical sicknesses that are caused by bad water supplies are cholera and what else?
Dysentery.
Dysentery, right. Which particularly for children is fatal often.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, you were starting to say.
No, that's okay. I was just agreeing. And many of the communities have said that it's been completely eradicated.
Now, Tom, when you first began this 25 years ago, how many wells did you put in the first trip you made over to Malawi?
Now, the first trip, actually, Marion Medical started in 1985, and we were in Zaire, which is now the Congo, and then we were in Ghana. But the shallow well program actually started in 1990 in Malawi, and the first year we put in 13 wells, and that was a miracle in itself and an incredible blessing.
Now, I want to ask what it means to put in a well, but before we do that, tell us over the 25-year period and since 1990 with the shallow well programs, how many wells have been put in up to now, and how many people perhaps have been affected in those villages?
We've built, working with the people hand in hand, and that's one of the key things, 10,921 wells, which provides an estimated 2 million people with a sustainable source of safe drinking water.
10,000, wow.
Incredible. And last year, we put in 2,071 wells in 1 year, in one season, in about 9 weeks. And, Paul, how many wells did you put in?
I think I was involved in about 205.
Wow.
And how long were you there?
I was there for a little bit over 5 weeks.
5 weeks.
But the key to understanding is also that it's not – the volunteers from the U.S. aren't really building the wells. It's the people in the villages and the communities. And everything that we do on that side, everything is made, everything is manufactured, purchased, and administered in Africa by Africans. And so what we do is as volunteers, we go and we work with these people who are actually experts in the building of shallow wells.
I want to get into some of those details in a minute, but let me take a break and just tell listeners that you can be a part of this conversation. If you have questions, if you have comments, do give us a call. If you're in the Champaign-Urbana listening area, punch in 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. If it's long distance, and perhaps you're listening even online, you can use the toll-free number, 1-800-222-9455. Paul, when you're described as a volunteer, you spent 5 weeks the last time you went. When was that?
That was last fall.
Now, does that mean you paid your way over there?
Absolutely. Volunteers are responsible for all of their travel costs to arrive in country and all of their in-country costs, which would be meals, other food items, hotels.
And why'd you do it?
The first time, I was curious about the organization and the work it was doing in Africa. And I'm fairly well traveled, but I had never been to Africa prior to 2005. And then the reason I continue to do it is because I'm really committed to what Marian Metal Commission stands for, how they're working in Africa, how we help to raise the local economy, use indigenous knowledge, work on a level playing field with the folks there.
Now, when you said earlier there are no administrative costs taken out of the money that people donate to this mm-hmm. cause, who pays for the administration? Tom, you want to tell us about that?
Well, I'm fortunate enough that I started my own business in 1973. I can't believe it was so long ago. And so the Marian Metal Commission's office is in my business office, and we use a lot of the equipment that we have here, and the Xerox and the phones and some of the envelopes and so forth we use. The other thing is that our board of directors now and then will provide some funds to help with administrative costs. And there are times when people will designate money specifically for administration as well. And for the past 25 years, we've been able to make that work.
Now, you have a website, Marian, and that is spelled M-A-R-I-O-N, Marian Medical
.org.
So people can go to that website if they want to learn more about it. If people don't have access to a computer, they can call the Marian Medical Mission office, and that's at 618-997-5365. Is that still correct?
That's correct.
Okay. And what's involved if someone wants to pay for a single well built somewhere in these three countries in Africa?
Well, they would just need to, well, cost $350, and they would need to write a check to Marian Medical Mission and then note on the check that it is for a well, and mail it to 1412 Shawnee Drive, Marian, Illinois, 62959. And we're a 501c3 tax-deductible organization, nonprofit.
So people can deduct that donation to the extent allowed by law. How many people donate?
Well, we've got about 4,000 people in our database spread out throughout the entire country.
And are there congregations that support it as well?
There are congregations and also civic organizations and others that do support Marian Medical Mission. We have a couple foundations as well.
And
most of the donations come in from the small donor. And the small donor is very, very important to Marian Medical Mission. And the reason they're very important is because that allows us to have that really provides us a base of strength. One of the problems with a large donor is that if the large donor decides that they want to do something different, then the base of your operation can be in trouble.
Now, you try to put in so many wells a year, and each year you've sort of tried to do more and more. Why do you do that?
Sometimes this particular year I just got too excited because our goal last year was to put in 2,000 wells, and we were able to put in 2,071, which that's 414,000 people that with safe drinking water in just a short period of time, as far as the construction of the wells are concerned, and I just got excited and said we're going to build 2,500 this year, and it's impossible. 2,000 wells is impossible. It's just an enormous task. With all kinds of logistical issues, you've got 2,500 villages that need to be organized, and 2,500 shallow well committees that need to be formed, and each committee has 5 men and 5 women.
And those committees are in the villages themselves.
Each village that has a well has a committee, and the neat thing about this is that the communities participate, which is an indication of how important this well is to them, safe drinking water. And they'll actually, each village that wants a well, they have to make the brick and provide the stone and the sand and the unskilled labor. But so they all participate in it.
And how do they learn how to do that?
Well, they've known how to make brick for many years. They knew how to make brick when I first arrived. So they know how to make the brick. And then they gather the sand and the stone, and then they provide the unskilled labor. And what we'll do is we'll go into an area that's maybe 5 kilometers in radius where there may be 10 or 15 villages, and we group our wells. And what will happen is that all those villages in that area will have a committee, and those villages will come together, and they'll select a couple people to become the maintenance folks. And this is very, very important, because the maintenance folks then are people that these communities know. It's some, it's people that they know, and it's someone whose family will benefit from the safe drinking water as well. But these two people that they've selected to become the maintenance folks for their area then work with the skilled African builders when they come in. And by the time the 10th well is built, that those maintenance people know that well inside and out. And then they become the person that takes care of the well. And if, say, a well breaks down, a well part wears out, the village then comes to the maintenance person, this person that they know in their community, and if he fixes the well within 48 hours, the village gives him a chicken or some vegetables or something for his time. And so he's a volunteer, but he gets paid with some food or chicken or something like that.
I might add to what Tom's saying. The unskilled labor, the villagers actually dig the well themselves, and this is dug the old-fashioned way. It's a man in a hole with a spike, and you bucket up the dirt one bucket at a time. What we provide, the volunteers and Marion Medical Mission, are the things that the villagers can't provide for themselves. So we'll provide the cement so they can mortar the bricks. We'll provide the pipe and the pumps. And the volunteers, we do this by driving four-wheel drive Toyota pickups into the bush and into these remote villages with the equipment. And then it is the responsibility of the villagers themselves and the maintenance folks to actually put everything together. And once it's done, you see clear, clean, fresh water.
Now, if somebody wants to be a volunteer like you and Gay, Paul, what do you do? How do you learn how to do all this?
Well, the first thing is you should contact Marion Medical Mission and let them know that you're interested. Then in winter, early spring, there'll be an application that will be posted on the website, and you fill out the application, you send that in, and it's really open to whomever is interested. You would be surprised, you know, ages range from 21 years old to 80 years old, and people come from all walks of life, and people come from a number of different religions and religious backgrounds. And so once you complete the application, then the board will review those applications and determine what their need is for the next mission trip, and then invite those to who had applied to participate.
And roughly, what does it cost?
Well, it will cost anywhere from, say, $3,000 to $4,000. And it really depends on where you are, where you're located. Some places where you stay, the lodging might be more expensive than elsewhere. And, of course, the cost of food. Also, transportation. If you're paying for your airfare, if you're flying from the West Coast, and heading out to Africa from the East Coast, that's going to add to your costs as well. There are also some additional costs. If you haven't traveled outside of the country, you're going to require medications and vaccinations for a number of potential illnesses.
Tom, how many volunteers went last year?
Last year we had 35 volunteers. This year we've got 37. And they're from all over the country.
And is it typically a 4 to 5 week commitment?
It's about a 3.5 week. You have to be on the ground in Malawi, in Africa, for 3 weeks. And so it takes you about, if you leave on a Friday, you arrive on a Sunday. It's like 3 days to get there and 2 days to get back, because there's a 7-hour time difference between Africa, or where we're going in Africa, and here. Well, in central Illinois, anyway.
We're talking on Keeping the Faith today with three folks who are involved in providing clean water by digging shallow wells in cooperation with Africans in three different countries in Central Africa. from the Marion Medical Mission. Marion is spelled M-A-R-I-O-N. It's the town in southern Illinois where this organization began. Tom Logan is the founder and a volunteer CEO of this operation. And in the he's talking with us by phone. Are you in Marion?
Yes, I'm in Marion. In fact, I'm in my office right now.
Okay. Yeah, right. And in our studio today are two folks from Monticello who have been on these trips, Gay Adams and her spouse, Paul. Paul is just about to retire from the Graduate School of Library and Information Sciences, where he's been the director of community networking and also is affiliated with the African Studies Department here. And you have about a week of retirement.
Five five more days.
All right. Yeah.
You're too young to be retired.
retired is just a word. This allows me an opportunity to expand my interests, and I've told a number of different people that it also enables me to work a little bit more with Marion Medical Mission and what we're doing in Africa.
That's wonderful.
Let me give phone numbers again for people who'd like to call in with a comment or question, 333-9455 if you're in the Champaign-Urbana listening area. If it's long distance, 1-800-222-9455. And, of course, if you've missed part of this program, it'll be archived in a week or so at the website will.illinois.edu/keepingthefaith. And you can go there and find the rest of this program and others that have been broadcast previously. My name is Steve Shoemaker. I'm the usual host for Keeping the Faith programs, and I might say that my wife Nadja and I have been supporting personally the Marion Medical Mission with a little bit of money every year for some time, and it's one of the things we're most pleased to be part of. We were able to go down to Marion for the 25th anniversary celebration just a couple weeks ago, which was a great treat, and heard a couple people from Africa who were representing, sharing their information, a Lutheran pastor. Is he from Zambia?
Yeah, it's Tom? Reverend Masakifo. He's from Tanzania.
Tanzania.
Yeah.
And then we also, what was the man's name from Malawi?
Mr. Kosa.
Kosa.
Malema Kosa. He's in the northern part of Malawi and has been with the program since 2000. Extraordinary community organizer. Very, very, very key to the program, as is Reverend Masakifo.
Community organizer, though, you're likely to lose him to become president of Malawi, right?
I don't think there's too much danger in that.
It's been known to happen. Tom Logan and I have known each other for years. Tom, you were at McCormick Seminary when I was, and before that you went to the University of Illinois and grew up in Decatur, Illinois, where your father was a pastor. Why didn't you become a pastor? You went to seminary.
Well, I found that my interests were more towards other issues. It's hard to say exactly why I didn't become a pastor. I think that there are a number of people that would tell you that it would never have worked. That the church would not have been happy with me very long. But I've been blessed to be involved in a lot of social issues for many years, and I started my own business, and we started putting together low income housing down in southern part of the state, and that kind of gives the base for me to be able to go to Africa.
Now, you'd been interested in Africa for a long time. Tell our listeners about your first trip.
My first trip to Africa was 1961. I was just a baby then. I was 18 years old. And I went to work on a road gang and saved up some money and bought a ticket and then hitchhiked through Africa. Spent time in Ghana and Cameroon and Gabon. Was with Albert Schweitzer at his hospital. He was 83, 84 years old at the time, I think, but still very strong. And spent a couple months with him, and then I was in the Congo and South Africa, and that was during the apartheid time. Went up through Rhodesia, anyway, and then up through Ethiopia, and so on. So,
And what caused a Decatur boy of 18 to do that?
Well, I was young and foolish, I guess. My dad used to take people on various tours, and he'd get people together, and he'd be able to lead the tour and do so freely and for free. And he went to Africa, and that intrigued me. And so I decided that I would do it. I had a number of other friends of mine that were also going to go with me, and it ended up that I was the only one that did it. So I was by myself. But the interesting thing was that when I was in Black Africa, when I was hitchhiking, it might have been, this is 1961, it might have been 4 hours before a car came by, or a truck, or a minibus. But the minibus or the truck or the car would always stop, and they'd always make room for me. And then they would allow me to ride for free. They would be upset if I tried to pay them. And many times I stayed in the villages, and the village people would provide me a place to stay and feed me and take care of me, and then be offended if I tried to give them anything. So you
really experienced the hospitality of Africans early on.
Yes. So the rural people were just very, 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 very wonderful. And if today I was to take you or anybody else to a village, just pick you up and drop you right down there, there'd be no way for them to know that you were coming. But they would right away find the best chair in the village, set it under a tree, and then the children and the women and other people would come by and greet you, and then they would disappear and try to find something that they could fix for you to eat. And so even if they didn't even know you were coming.
When you came back from your first trip to Africa, you went immediately to the University of Illinois?
No, I was went to a 2-year school in North Carolina, Warren Wilson College in Swannanoa, North Carolina. It was a work school. You work half a day and go to school half a day. And then that at that time, it was just a 2-year school.
And what made you switch back to Illinois? Be closer to home?
Well, I mean, it was inexpensive.
Sure.
And Warren Wilson at that time was just 2 years.
What did you study at the U of I?
Sociology and psychology.
And you met your spouse, Jocelyn, there, who's also been very active and important to the Marion Medical Mission.
Absolutely. I met her in Swannanoa at Warren Wilson.
Oh, at Warren. Okay. Yeah. But you both came to the U of I.
We both came up to U of I, and we got married when we graduated in 1966.
And what were you involved in as an undergraduate student?
Well, I worked for SCLC, Martin Luther King's organization, and worked on voter registration in Utah, Alabama, and went down to the march from Selma, and was in Montgomery and a number of other places.
And you were able to do that and still be a student?
Well, a lot of people would say I wasn't a very good student.
But you did manage to get into seminary.
I did manage to graduate from UVI and managed to get into seminary and managed to graduate from seminary.
Let's find out about the people here in the studio. Gay, what about you? What led you into chiropractic?
Well, my undergraduate degree was music therapy at Western Illinois University. And at the time when I graduated, it was a new field. I knew that a medical field was important to me, so I experienced a wonderful treatments from an osteopath and a chiropractor both, and decided that was something that I wanted to do. So I went back to school and graduated with my chiropractic degree in the early 90s.
Where did you meet Paul?
We met at Western Illinois. That's uh-huh. where I received my undergraduate, and he was working on a graduate degree.
And, Paul, where did you grow up?
A little bit all over. As I mentioned earlier, I pretty well traveled. My father worked for the U.S. government, and we were located at U.S. embassies around Asia primarily. And when it was time to go to college, I looked at small Monmouth College in the western part of the state of Illinois and became a Midwesterner.
And then you ended up at Western for graduate school?
Yes.
In what?
It's geography with a concentration in urban regional planning. And then I was a professional planner for a number of years before I came to the university.
Where?
Did regional planning in Yankton, South Dakota, and was a senior planner at the city of Davenport, Iowa. And then I also worked for the city of Champaign.
And that's what brought you to this region, this
yes,
town?
Right.
Uh-huh. And you went to work for the university when?
I've been here about 13 years.
Okay.
And prior to my current position, I was director of PrairieNet, which is a community network that was founded here in Champaign-Urbana.
A wonderful service. Mm-hmm. We're talking about the Marion Medical Mission. Let me give you the phone numbers if you'd like to make a comment or ask a question. 333-9455 in Champaign-Urbana. Elsewhere, 1-800-222-9455 is a toll-free number. We have had a caller who didn't want to go on the air, but he told our engineer, Kyle Croa, that he himself intends to donate to the Marion Medical Mission, and he wants to encourage other listeners to do the same. If you'd be interested in that, for $350, you can pay for a well in a village that might provide water for how many people, Tom?
On average, 200 people.
200 people in a small village for $350. To do that, you can go to the website, which is marionmedical.org. That's M-A-R-I-O-N, marionmedical.org. To get more information, you can call 618-997-5365. Send a check to Marion Medical Mission, 1412 Shawnee Drive, S-H-A-W-N-E-E, Marion, Illinois, 62959. Tom, when you and talked to Jocelyn about this idea you had, you still had children at home, we're still thinking of sending them to college. How did she react?
She was always very supportive. I mean, she helped, has always been part of the foundation of everything that I've been involved in and have done. And created a little more. I mean, when I was gone to Africa initially, the first few years until, I guess, 1993 was her, or 92 was her first trip to Africa. But the kids were young, and she needed to stay, and she gave me the chance to go and get a lot of the program started.
Now, we've talked about this program as being open to people of any faith, and, of course, people who get the water may have some faith, religious tradition, or not, but... It began as a Christian organization.
And it still is.
All right.
Our purpose is to share the love of Christ, and we do that by providing the extreme poor in Africa with a sustainable source of safe drinking water. But the thing about this program, the Shallow Well program, it's absolutely extraordinary. I mean, I don't know how to it's miraculous. I mean, it's holy ground. It is what Martin Luther King used to call, and it is the beloved community. You see, it's brought all kinds of people and backgrounds together. It brings the extreme poor, the not so poor, the wealthy, black people and white people, Americans and Africans, white collar people and blue collar people, college professors with PhDs and those who have never attended school at all, as well as those with diverse cultures and diverse religions, which is, you see, God's creation that brings everybody together. And that's one of the extraordinary things about this program.
Your father has passed away, but did he know about this program before he died?
No. My dad died when I was working in Cairo. It's spelled Cairo, but it's pronounced Cairo, Illinois, down in the southern tip of the state.
Well, I still run into people who knew your father who they've told me he would be very proud at what's been accomplished.
He was an extraordinary man, one that I try to live up to.
Paul, when you made your first trip, what actually happens when you hit the ground in Africa?
Well,
as a volunteer.
Okay, as Tom mentioned, you're on the ground for about 3 weeks, and the first day you try to get yourself acclimated. You also go through like a mini training session. We've had a training session in the U.S. prior to departure, but we'll do a training session there. You'll learn a little bit more about how the well is, how it's built. You'll learn where in Malawi, Tanzania, you might be going. You'll learn who your partner is. You'll learn how to use some of the other
tools. So you work in teams, two of you?
Teams of two. Okay. And then you'll also learn how to use some of the other equipment. We need to take a GPS reading for each site. When you say this town has a well, the town or the village may be fairly dispersed. And so you need a GPS rating so you can figure out exactly where that is by mapping it. We also have cameras because we take a photograph of the completed well and the celebration around the well. And one picture goes back to the village, so they have a memento. And then the other picture is sent to the individual who has contributed towards the well, and so that they get to see what it's like, what their contribution has meant to the village. So there's a day of preparation. Then once everybody has their assignments, you've got the trucks loaded up with equipment and tools, and then you disperse and head out to the various areas in which you're going to be working for the duration of the trip.
Now, with people of different ages and physical abilities, strong, weak, old, young, male, female, how does the work get divided up?
We're spread out, Steve, over a large area, say about 500 miles long by 150 miles wide. And we'll take a look at the volunteers. And some of the areas you have to be tough, like Paul, and be able to hike up mountains and down and around and carry stuff. And it can be very, very difficult. But there are some areas that we're working in where you could almost drive right up to the well site. And so it depends on how we determine and what we think the volunteer is able to handle. Now it's difficult. There's no question about that. It's not easy. But what we'll do is we'll pair up a new volunteer with an experienced volunteer. We have many people like Paul. When they go once, a lot of times almost always people want to go again. And so one of the things that our board has done is said that half of the volunteers that go each year must be new people and half are people who have been before. And so you pair someone up who's new with someone who is experienced. And then you also pair people up based on what they can handle. And the other thing to know is that if it gets a little bit too difficult physically, the Malawians, the Africans, will of course help out, and they'll make sure that and they take very, very good care of the volunteers.
I want to talk about things like safety and about some of the details of actually putting in the wells and the equipment involved, and you know how you know if it's clean water and all that stuff. But we're a little bit past halfway through the program. Let me take just a minute so that listeners will know what's coming up in future weeks. We will be talking August 15 here on Keeping the Faith with Craig Jessup, who is the former director of the Mormon Tabernacle Choir. He is now the dean of the College of the Arts at Utah State University, as well as he was head of the Department of Music there. We'll be talking about the faith and music, and particularly the Mormon faith in relation to music. That's August 15 here on Keeping the Faith. On August 22nd, our guest will be Dave Boyer. David Boyer is the CEO of Ways to Help, a new nonprofit or organization helping to encourage high school students to volunteer in their communities. That's August 22nd. We'll be talking with Dave Boyer by phone from San Francisco. Later in September, we'll be talking to Shirley Stillinger, a former social worker, about the homeless mentally ill. Those are some of the programs coming up here at 5 o'clock on WILL AM 580, a service of Illinois Public Media. We're also heard at 90.9 FM, HD 2 and 3 in Urbana, and online at will.illinois.edu. Again, the phone numbers, if you'd like to call us today. This is a live show with our two guests in studio and one by phone, 333-9455 or 1-800-222-9455. The University YMCA has been supportive of Keeping the Faith for many years, and one of their biggest programs is coming up very shortly. They'll be collecting more things for Dump and Run at the Illinois Stock Pavilion starting August 11. That's a Wednesday from 9 to 4, also Thursday and Friday and Saturday from 9 till 7 on Thursday, August 12, from 9 to 4 again on Friday, and Saturday morning, August 14, from 9 till noon. They're collecting furniture and working electronics and backpacks and bicycles and school supplies and CDs and books and working computers, pictures, posters, toys, sports equipment, almost anything you have in your attic or garage, particularly that new students coming to the University of Illinois in just a few more weeks might find valuable. Particularly international students who come here often with just a couple suitcases. So if you have things to donate, these will be sold very cheaply for these entering students and other people as well. And it helps raise money for the Y. It provides people with a lot of things they need very inexpensively. And, of course, it keeps things from being just thrown away. So, recycle stuff you've got around, bring it to the University Stock Pavilion. That's 1402 West Pennsylvania, north of the cemetery there, and just east of Memorial Stadium, the football stadium. They won't be accepting clothing at this point or computer monitors. There are a few other things, appliances, large appliances the Y can't deal with. But if you have questions, you can go to the Y website, which is universityymca.org. And if you don't have access to a computer, call the Y at 337-1500. And again, the sale will come up August 21st and 22nd. That's a Saturday and Sunday, the big sale, also at the Stock Pavilion. But the collection starts August 11 and goes through the 14th. Well, let's get back to talking with our guest today about clean water via shallow wells. Tom, why shallow wells?
Well, it's because it's shallow. We go down 10, 15, 20, 25 foot, sometimes 30 foot.
So there's good water in this part of Africa, not very far below the surface.
Well, you can find it in most places throughout Africa, actually. It can't be built everywhere. I mean, there are a lot of areas where you'd need to have a borehole, which can go down 100 meters or whatever. But the problem is when you go down and you put a borehole in, it's going to cost you $7,000, $8,000, $10,000, $12,000. Whereas we can provide a well that the people are able to maintain and sustain for $350. And they participate in the construction of it. They have ownership of it.
And how do you know the water's clean, safe?
Well, people will ask me that, and I've got I tell them that you drink it, and if you don't get sick, it's good. but the other thing that I'll add to that, I mean, I know that sounds kind of flippant or whatever, but the difference between the water that they're getting now and the water that they get when they have a well is just like night and day, and anybody who's been on our trips will verify that. But also, Dr. Paul Jewett was a missionary doctor at Imbangwini Hospital for 6 years, and he is a big advocate of this program because he saw the impact that it had on the health of the children in the area. And so he has been a big advocate of the shallow well program, as has Dr. Becky Loomis, who is also a doctor in Malawi.
And so that's
pretty strong evidence that that there is a difference, and people like Paul and Gay have also seen the impact of it.
Gay, before the well is built, what are people drinking?
Often they're open water sources at the roots or the base of trees, or just simply dug holes out in the field. And unfortunately, it's the same source of water that's used by livestock or animals. And that's where a lot of the debris and dirt and things come from. And the water is just, it's what you expect out of a muddy hole. It's muddy. And I tell you, you cannot believe how crystal clear the water is the first pump out of that well, and the elation in the community and the health that you know it's going to bring.
Paul, tell us, as a volunteer who's been four times, what do you do when you get to the well site? And then what does the well look like when it's finished?
When we arrive at the well site, the villagers have already been working. In fact, we should probably note that the wells are dug at the driest time of the year, which we're going into the dry season right now. So soon villagers will be digging these wells. And the reason for that is that if you find water at the driest time, obviously you'll find water all year long. And so we ask them to dig down till they find water and then go another 5 feet, because they may lose some of that water through the because it's so dry.
You described how they dig the hole, then they put brick in that hole.
Right. Then you put brick, and you brick up maybe the first 5 feet, and you don't mortar it so that the water can permeate through the soil and come in, and that's part of the cleansing, natural cleansing part of
filtering.
Right, the well. And then it's mortared up to the top, and then it is cemented. There's an apron to handle runoff of the water, and then there is a superstructure around part of the well that's extended maybe 2.5 feet above it, and that superstructure is where you place the actual pump on top of. And the idea of the superstructure is that the women can use that to help get the bucket to their head, as opposed to dragging a 5-gallon bucket from the ground.
And it's typically a woman's job in this culture to bring water.
That's right. And then once we arrive, we have the equipment placed into the well. And then once the well has been completed and we're pumping clean water, the villagers are celebrating. We have a celebration around the well where I'll talk to the villagers and say that this is a gift from Christians in America who understand the plight of poor water. And we try to emphasize the fact that it's their well, that it doesn't belong to us or the people who contributed towards it. It's their well, and it's their responsibility. And then we'll have a prayer, and afterwards there'll be somebody from the village, either the well committee or the village headman, somebody who will then get up and tell what this well means to the village. And as Gay had mentioned earlier, you know, they'll talk about they never could believe that they would have water that they didn't have to share with the animals, or that the water would be so clean, and how their children will grow up to be strong. And then once that's completed, then we start to head back to our pickup truck to leave. And invariably, the villagers will want to give us a gift. And for me, that was always the most difficult part of the trip, because these villagers,
they're very poor people.
They're very poor. And particularly the gifts that they might give us might be eggs or a chicken, I mean, sources of protein, and you know that they're not going to have that protein that day or maybe that week. I'll tell you one quick story. I was at a well, and all the men were out working, and so there were just women at this particular well, and we installed it, and we had our ceremony afterwards. And once it was complete, the women came to me and they said, "We're so poor that we have nothing to give you, but we will give you what God has given us." And then they went to a banana tree and they cut off the bananas and handed me the fruit, which I took home.
Tom, you recently had a fundraiser to celebrate the 25th anniversary with a lot of crafts from Africa that people who were there I bid on in a silent auction. There were some really lovely pieces of art and craftsmanship. Where did those come from?
Well, they all came from Malawi. I think 99% came from Malawi. I don't think anything came from anywhere else. There may have been.
Were they bought over there? Were they? Did the people who made them get some money for it, or did they donate it, or what?
No. They were made and by the Malawians, and then we purchased them and brought them back to the States.
Now that's not a very efficient way to make money for a nonprofit. I know from having participated in other fundraising auctions. It's a lot of work for sometimes not a whole lot of gain. Are you happy you did it, or do you regret it?
Oh no. It was. If it was up to me, there'd probably not been a silent auction. But my wife and a number of the other volunteers put that together. And that's the other thing about us. There's lots of people, lots of volunteers that do just wonderful things, and it was just an extraordinary affair with lots of people participating.
So did it actually end up producing some more money to make wells?
We have a total of, I don't know exactly, it's over $16,000 that we took in. That's very good. That's going to be a big boost, big help.
But with all of your donations from churches and synagogues and mosques and whoever, and who, I don't know how many individuals and foundations and so forth, what's the budget these days for so that you can put in 2,500 wells, you hope, during this next dry season?
It's $350 times 2,500. Who's good at math?
Paul's taking care of that for us here. So,
but our budget probably is around $1.5 million.
Hmm.
And again, you know, this is a mission that operates on faith. Thus far, we've received donations for probably around a half of the wells thus far, so we've got about half of the donations to come in. But understand that 2,500 villages have been told that they're going to get a well this year, and so they're working and they're going to do their part. They're making the brick and are organizing their committees and understand that they've got to make the brick and provide the stone and the sand and the unskilled labor, and they're ready for us, and so we've got to do what we can do on this side, and that is provide what they can't, and with God's blessings, we're going to do it.
Now, how many of your donations come from Central Illinois and Indiana, within the hearing distance of this show over the air? It started here. A lot of the volunteers come from here. Do you have any idea how much of the support financially comes from this area?
Steve, I really don't know, to be honest. But we do get a lot of support from Illinois and the central part of the country. We get a lot of support. But we also get support from Colorado and Georgia and New York and so forth. So
as people hear about the program.
People hear about it, and it's one of the things the volunteers do. In fact, one of the most important things that volunteers do is come back and tell the story. And that's how the word gets out about who we are and what we're doing.
Gay, do you have a story for us from your trip?
No, I have several, but probably my most favorite story was at one village, mostly women, but an elderly woman approached me and thanked me for bringing this clean drinking water and said that she realizes that I would probably never remember her, but that she would remember me for the rest of her life. And 3 days later, we were at a village, I don't know, quite a ways away. And as we were getting ready to leave, someone said, wait, someone has walked here to see you. And the crowd kind of parted and into the area walked Victoria. I will never forget her. And she brought with her grandson. And she said, we walked all this way. Not only did you show me love by bringing me clean drinking water, I also gave her a T-shirt because she needed a clean, nice T-shirt. But she said, I mostly want my grandson to meet the woman that brought us the water that he will grow up and live healthily on. And also brought me a couple eggs, which, as Paul had said before, that's a tough thing to take. And one other gift that she gave me was her sleeping mat as we left the village. And I knew that night she would sleep on the bare ground, and that sleeping mat's in my living room. I think of her every day. I will never forget her.
Again, to make a contribution or to volunteer to actually go to Africa at your own expense to help work very hard for several weeks, helping provide clean water for villages through the Marian Medical Mission. Go to marianmedical.org, M-A-R-I-O-N, marianmedical.org, or call 618-997-5365, or send a check to Marian Medical Mission, 1412 Shawnee Drive, S-H-A-W-N-E-E, Marian, Illinois, 62959.
Another way to get information about Marian Medical Mission, as Tom mentioned, the volunteers come back with numerous stories about their own experiences. So if you are part of a civic organization or a church and you want to have someone come and do a presentation for your group, then you can contact Marian Medical Mission and let them know, and they will try to find a volunteer in that area to go ahead and talk to you. I've talked to a number of different civic groups, and so if you're in the Champaign-Urbana area, you can contact me directly at padams@illinois.edu, and I'd be more than happy to talk to your group.
We're about out of time. Let me thank our guests today. We've been talking with Tom Logan from Marian, Illinois, who helped start the Marian Medical Mission now 25 years ago. And Tom is the volunteer CEO of this organization and goes along on all these trips and pays his own way like all the other volunteers do. Paul Adams is a volunteer also who's been four times and is going again this fall. He is has been with the Graduate School of the Library and Information Sciences here at the University of Illinois as director of the Community Networking Center, as well as being affiliated with African Studies, and has taken students to different parts of Africa as well. His wife, Gay, is a chiropractor in Monticello, Illinois, and has also been a volunteer helping to go put in shallow wells in these three countries in Africa. My name is Steve Shoemaker. I'm the usual host for Keeping the Faith. And coming up in the next couple of weeks, we'll be talking with Craig Jessup, former director of the Mormon Tabernacle Choir, about faith and music, with Dave Boyer, head of Ways to Help, that works with high schools, helping them encourage students to be volunteering in their communities. That's Craig Jessup, August 15, August 22nd, David Boyer. Again, a reminder that the University Y is collecting things for the Big Dump and Run sale starting August 11, 12, 13, and 14. The sale itself will be August 21 and 22, and that's in the U of I Stock Pavilion. Thank you for listening to Keeping the Faith.